This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Good morning, kia ora, and welcome to Free Left Turn, a left-wing perspective here on 89.0 Independent Community Media. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Mick.
How's it going?
Yeah. I think the last person to use this must have been really, really, really deaf.
Oh, what are your headphones?
We got blown away. Fried his brain.
Move the cobwebs out, so to speak.
Yeah. Or fried the brain. Okay. What was left of it? Yes, but I think we've got an important announcement, Mick, regarding Hamilton City Council.
Yes. I discovered this purely by chance conversation on Wednesday. I thought I'd have to check the papers, and it was in the very next day. And the headline reads, "Redo accepted over voting change." And the second headline reads, "The move just got approved, but could be overturned after a challenge over consultation," which there was no...
This is about the council voting system.
They voted 9-6 to vote, switch back to first past the post from STV for the 2028 and 2031 elections. But there was no public consultation.
Council elections.
No feedback, no... Yes, so it's been challenged by councillors Robbie Nehart and Sue Moroney.
And others.
The ones who've got the photo on.
Yeah.
Yep.
But I just thought, when I heard it, I thought, I had a few choice expletives that came to mind.
Yes, this is a family show.
I'm sure people can work out what I was thinking. But I just thought, they just arbitrarily decided to switch back. No public consultation, no...
Yeah.
Arrogant.
Yeah. And let's face it, it jumped in. If people didn't even know that we're going to have that sort of discussion. And let's face it, I'm all for questioning it, but the time is at your voting cycle.
I don't have a beef about discussing the system. Do you want to go back to the old one or keep the one we've got, but put it out for public debate?
Yeah.
Ask the people.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So what's happened is that there's another review. They're going to have another meeting about it this week coming. Yeah. So I think on the 15th, the 16th, is it?
Yeah, they got a date. Doesn't say here.
Yeah, but it's very close.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they're going to have another meeting about it. So whether what I call practical heads will go, okay, well, we'll take it back to the people, because the ST, what is it called?
Single transferable vote
did go to the people in the first place to see if they wanted it.
Yeah.
So they've had one vote. Let's have another vote, and they can have a referendum in that.
All you need to do is another question on the ballot paper.
And doesn't cost anything.
Do you want to keep the current system of STV, or do you want to go back to first past the post? Yes,
no. Yeah. And doesn't cost any more money. It's in the voting ballot. Yeah.
But this is really underhand.
It's a right-wing coup or plot.
Is a block there,
right? Right-wing plot.
Well, and to me, the bigger thing should have been is they should have been having a meeting. How do we get more than 30% of the people to vote? It's probably only 25% of people non-registered.
Yeah, that's more important, I think. Encouraging more participation.
More democracy.
Participation and democracy.
But someone says here that the original proposal before council on Friday was to vote for staff recommendation to keep STV, single transferable vote. However, that changed on the day through a late amendment. There had been no indication at all in early discussion that there was any dissent from keeping the current system in place. This is Sue Moroney.
I wonder who, I would like to know who made that amendment.
And as you quite partly point out, it is best and standard practice. If you're going to change something substantial, that you keep the status quo in place until you hear what the voters want, rather than change first and then find out what they want.
I find that article rather naughty, though. It doesn't name the people who supported it.
No.
It's a bit lazy.
Yeah, very lazy. Who were these? Who were the nine who supported this?
And Max Wright.
I've got a rough idea who.
We know. Smell a rat.
But it's quite... Let's face it, it's about democracy, about the democratic process. Mm. That's something that the people should have an input in.
Yeah, very much so.
Especially.
It's a voting process.
And these people got into public office through the current system.
Yeah.
So what's their problem?
Yeah.
I think they want to entrench the right-wing bloc.
Was it potentially a threat to, you know, disenfranchisement?
I don't know. I personally think if they do take it back to a referendum, it could well go back to first past the post. Bearing in mind the people and what demographics they come from who generally
it's
vote.
It's not going to change that much.
Yeah. No.
If they don't participate, they're not going to participate at all.
Next time either.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
But it's not the point. The point is democratic process, ask the people.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was pretty disgusted with that.
Yeah.
And of course we had our, I decided to call the Clayton pushed.
Yeah. The coup that wasn't a coup.
Yeah, I know it wasn't going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
I just thought this far out from you having a leadership doesn't make any sense.
And there wasn't like a wonder star. Sometimes there's just someone in a party and you go, well, actually, Bob's holding up this amazing star behind them. But the Nats haven't got anyone amazing behind them.
No.
Not that who comes to mind that you think,
who's amazing? It depends on your definition of amazing.
Hang on, see if I can still do it.
I'm waiting.
It's just not there.
Yeah.
There's a tumbleweed just gone past.
Yeah,
but I always think he's been so many guests, and the Herald actually kindly provided some reminders, like June 2023, captured mojo alert, captured by a camera operator saying to a Helensville farmer, "We've become a very negative, wet, whiny, inward-looking country, and we lost the plot and had to get our mojo back."
That's very well to say from someone who's a millionaire with multiple properties, a comfortable job.
The next month, he even went worse. He said that, just kidding, he tried to explain, says New Zealand women need to have more babies if they didn't like immigration.
that's a horrible comment to make.
Just stumble. And, of course, the holiday thing when he was supposedly in Tipuki, when he was actually in
that was
Hawaii.
To me the worst one. It was like subterfuge, wasn't it? I'm working hard, sunning myself on the beach. Giving Jonky a massage or something, you know.
You should golf. Go back to the woman one of having more babies. How many did him and his wife have?
It's probably taken out of context a little bit. Fair to him, but
even so, you keep your mouth shut.
Well, the women are in the workforce. Women are in the workforce now. You know, that's a reality.
I'd love to know what his private conversation at Luxon's home.
I could imagine.
Yes.
Did you say that?
It's just unbelievable. How many gaffes this guy? And there's only a few of them.
Yeah,
it's just unbelievable.
But he'll still get the National Party vote as far as the elections go.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who you put in there.
Anybody.
Certain group would still vote.
I've talked to a few people who vote National, and I said, well, that's fine. And I said, but they're happy with their current leadership. I said, well, does that mean you're going to change the way you vote?
No, absolutely.
So why are you grizzling?
Why
give me your grief about your terrible leader if you're not going to
You know what it is? I've still got a wet dream about. Sorry, I've still got a dream about John Key. I'm serious about Nats. I still get it from.
If he came back, he'd be in like a shot.
Well, as a leader,
and he would get the votes.
But they still go, "Oh, we just want a John Key. That was so lovely."
Old personality over substance.
Or
integrity.
Total
lack of substance.
And they still have a dream about that. And so, you know, and they sort of thought Luxon will do the same, successful business
Not in a month or so.
He isn't the charmer he was, you know.
He's got the personality of...
He's probably not as shallow as Key was, but but I say, doesn't have that sell that going on.
The people who prefer personality over substance must be really disappointed. Like, I always comment on his suits, and they must be the most ill-fitting suits I've ever seen a man wear.
Yeah.
He's a politician. He's head of the country, and he goes overseas, meets other, and thinking, you've got no class.
Yeah. He's a stupid bald-headed man.
You can afford a bespoke tailor.
Well, yeah.
No, just
and you it. Give old Winnie, who you know, he's always well dressed. Yeah, you know, he seems to be tailored
you,
up.
You forgot this one there, Mick.
What's that?
A tax labours Ute tax while enjoying the 8K plus rebate on the family Tesla.
Electric cars. Yeah. That's right.
What a hypocrite.
Yeah, maybe should have asked his wife, because didn't she buy it just before or something?
Yeah, something like that.
There was a bit of a foo-foo about will they, won't they?
Yeah. And the entitlement over the $50,000 accommodation benefit.
Yeah, but the stuff.
No, he's entitled to, but he didn't pay it back.
Yeah. When you refer to Clayton's pooch, you have to read the comments and stuff about what some of these ministers had said.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Mark Mitchell just landed in Wellington a short time ago. He told reporters, "The Prime Minister always has and continues to have my full confidence. If it came down to a caucus vote, he would vote in support of Christopher Luxon."
Mm. I said, every time a politician uses that phraseology, you go, no, he means the opposite.
Yeah.
Full support why he's there. Yeah. But okay, if the writing's on the wall. Yeah.
But similar vein was that the Maori morale went more than doubles.
Oh, yeah.
This is in the Herald on Tuesday. But it said, well, the headline read, Maori enrollment more than doubles, and the second heading says, but 440,000 remain unregistered ahead of the changed October 25th deadline.
And that's my argument about how many are unregistered.
Yes.
You know, yeah.
So the numbers have gone up, but it's,
yeah.
So, and it's a huge whack of people. It's the unregistered voters, because they don't fit in the statistics.
Age between 18 and 24, who are not registered.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
And they have their lives in front of them, so it's quite critical who's in government and government direction, of course.
Because the policies that come up that's going to affect them later on in life, we're lucky that we'll slip off the mortal coals. But they're going to have to bear the brunt of
and if you're some poor, of these policies. If you're poor and disadvantaged, what governments do or don't do or directions that
direct
is bearing. Huge benefit. If you're the son of a farmer, you can plot on and you're fine.
You've got a buffer.
Yeah, you'll have a roof
things
over
aren't
your
that
head.
Difficult. You can get around it.
Yeah.
But if you're on the bones of your bum, you've got no options.
What the accommodation supplement is really important. What the benefit is really important. Mm. What the medical care is really important.
Say
the wealthy have some choices in the reality.
They always have.
Yeah. And the wealthy go and vote and the poor don't.
Yeah, and that's
I'm generalising here, but that's...
That seems to be the current trend.
Everything
that...
And they don't seem to realise that there's an awful lot of them in comparison to the ones who do vote.
Yeah.
As a voting bloc, as a potential voting bloc, they're huge.
Yeah.
But people don't make the connection. Oh, if we all got together...
And voted.
We could make a difference.
Yeah.
Because there's no guarantees in the system.
No, of course not.
If you don't put into it, then you're going to have to accept crumbs coming back.
I was brought up in a reasonably Tory household, and I'm always remember the conversations around the, you know, if the adults were talking about when I was a kid, is, oh, let's hope it's a rainy day on voting day, they'll stay at home, you know. I still hear that from some of my Tory friends.
I used to hear that in the UK as well.
Yeah, you would.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Bad weather, ice work.
Yeah, and first past the post, which was, you know, so, yeah.
Which is a failed system.
Okay. Hey, can I go on to that? Because it's political. And I know you guys probably see it differently, but I think we should talk about it because this is the opportunity party.
Right.
Because let's face it, they've virtually come from nowhere in the polling.
They've broken the 5% threshold, haven't they?
They've had two polls. One was at 5%, one was at nearly 8%.
Wow.
So they're obviously gaining some traction. And so I had a little bit of a look. So I'll declare my hand. I actually went to a meeting with Gareth Morgan when he was doing one in Hamilton when he first opened.
Yonks ago.
This could be 15
late
90s. Years ago. Whatever. I don't know when he first had it. But anyway, so I thought, I'll have a bit of a look. Why? I really want to know why is the Opportunity Party gaining some thing? And this Kualin Wong, the leader, she's very very slick, very personable.
Yeah.
And she...
how do they describe themselves? I mean, I kind of think they're like sort of lightweight Tories.
Well...
That's me too, yeah.
Like, yeah, they can...
I might be wrong, but...
Well, I think what they're offering is saying, well, we're thinking outside the square.
Okay. Yeah.
And right. So, and this all is right. So, I recommend that people who are curious go to their
website
because okay, that's they're pushing their own agenda.
Of course. Yeah,
it's a very slick, very professional right. presentation.
So there's
very
money, slick. So there's money behind
someone's and effort. This is just
Gareth.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if Gareth's still back
still
in
around?
It. Yeah, he's still around.
Oh, right.
And his son, who was Trade Me, you know.
Oh, okay.
So, but who knows? But all I'm saying is
they've done some effort.
There's some very slick. And what? So she's personable. The other thing I noticed is their top six on the list are all 30 to 50 year old, and they don't present themselves as old white stale males.
Right.
Yeah. Very cross diversified. They are basically, and you said it before, Mick, what they're saying to people is, are you sick and tired of the old politics with no outside thinking?
Yeah.
And we've said it before, you get Nats have a turn for two terms and Labor has a term for one usually or whatever.
Yeah.
But no one's looking at changing the system, how we tax, how we do things.
Because they all benefit.
And the Opportunity Party says, we want to change the tax system.
Right.
We want to have some capital. We want to have some land taxes. We want to
death duties and stuff like that.
Yeah. So they're not. Right. They're thinking outside the square, and I didn't write it all down, but that's their basic premise. Is that they're saying, well, next election, we will work. We'll be prepared to either go in a coalition with the Nats or Labor.
Yeah, and
the Nats have already said, no, we don't want to go in with them. But, you know, the bottom line, what happens when the voters decide?
Of course. Then they'll change.
Yeah they'll change.
Don't worry about it. They'll see reality.
We'll have a coffee at
the other end. Hipkins has said that the door's open as far as Labor is concerned.
In actual fact, I think Labor and the Opportunity Party are probably closer together than the Nats.
Right.
The opportunity and the on their promotion is I wrote it down because I was thinking. So they're saying that if they have to go in with National, they will give National a greener heart. In other words, a more environmental conscious heart. If we have to go in with Labor, we'll savvy them up on business.
That's interesting.
Yeah,
switch.
It's a clever switch.
Yeah,
it's a very clever switch.
I tend to my cringe gland tends to vibrate quite violently when I hear politicians use the word slick.
I'm just really
suspicious of politicians.
But I ask you what your opinion is. But I do think generally people in the Western world, they're a bit over the old neoliberal capitalist model and its ruthlessness.
So they're desperate for change, proper change.
Yeah. And hence the appeal that maybe Opportunity Party's got. Where it's coming from, there's, what's the name of the thing? Talbot.
Yeah.
And they basically said, where's the support coming from? So they did a bit more drilling down in the poll. And 20% basically, just over 20% came from ex-Nat voters, around 20% from Labor voters, potentially.
Yeah.
Even 10 or 11% from New Zealand First. Mm-hmm. And then from various others.
So across the board, age-wise?
Across the board, and 20% come from old tops originals.
Right. Oh, okay.
You know, which... But it just shows you, and it goes back, people are sick and tired of the old let's have a turn and not changing anything.
Yeah, it's been for decades.
Yeah.
And it goes back, we were talking before, why don't people vote? Well, they see no difference, especially, and unfortunately... It is the difference if you're poor, and probably not so much if you're well off. But so they're appealing that they're saying, well, we're going to look at things differently.
Right.
So
we'll see,
Wait and see. I'm not saying, but I'm just saying that's a very slick, impressive. She's an impressive leader.
I don't like the word slick, but you, Mick.
Yeah,
kind of reminds me of Hitler's hairstyle.
But
car salesman.
Because I've said this before on air, but you know, it's like I look at this is how I see this sort of political layout. ACT doesn't give a toss about anyone else. The Nats pretend to care but still doesn't give a toss about anyone else apart from their own grandchildren. Labor wants to care about everyone but still wants to keep the status quo's economic system.
Yeah.
New Zealand First wants to live in the 1960s based on race-based supremacy. The Greens care about everyone and everything, but don't quite have the economic acumen.
Well, they seem to be a prime candidate for maybe to link up with Top.
Yeah, Te Pāre Māori, Māori for Māori, so they're doing similar on the other side as New Zealand First. And
not as bad. Yeah, though.
And Top is looking, saying, well, think outside the square, but it's still which way will the wind blow in that?
Think outside the square. Yeah.
But anyway, that's why they're growing in support. And that's what I like about MMP, and I don't know about you guys think, but I like MMP. It doesn't shut the door out from different thinking.
Yeah, yeah, I know
that.
Is that a fair comment?
But it doesn't have to get a loony fringe because they can't do anything anyway.
Well, and if you don't get in, you've got an idea and you run with it.
If they do, they can't form a coalition anywhere else. But democracy is spoken. Well, so some people have been voted in, so they're in Parliament.
Yep.
They can try and push some of their policies, which might be on the fringe, but if they can't get any support from potential...
Well, the alliance is a typical example.
It's not going to go anywhere.
Social credit was a typical...
Because people can keep banging on. The trouble of proportional representation means the loonies get in. I said, yeah, but even if the loonies do get in, there's no guarantee, or doesn't necessarily follow, they're going to be able to push their agenda.
Yeah.
They might get one or two things... Well,
yeah,
you know, we've got now a loony right wing government. You've got
New Zealand
First and National. Yeah. We're not quite sure who's running it, but you know, it still functions. Our government still functions.
Well, you said the other week that we've had MMP for what since 1996,
isn't it? 93.
Stable governments.
There's
no government's been brought down because of lack of confidence or whatever.
Not just things we like all about what the governments have done, but that's life.
Yeah, but there hasn't been a crisis. There hasn't been a...
We're not seeing like
constitutional
Italy.
Crisis.
Yeah, and even Italy's calmed down a bit. But
over the years,
In Germany, you've got the Alternative Workers' Party.
But I just go back. I just think people are... There's obviously... And fortunately, enough people are looking around going, we're sick of this... Just having turns type of political system.
Yeah, that's what you were saying, Fred. And that's falling off support of the main parties.
Yeah, and you've seen that in the polls, and even some of the other polls.
It's picked up by parties who are pushing for a more sustainable form of government, economics and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
So people feel included.
Yeah.
Because what we've got is people are feeling excluded. That's
where you get a rise in antisocial behaviour.
Because you're not invested in the community, so you are going to go do vandalism, you are going to pull out break trees, you don't give a toss, because no one gives a toss about you.
Yeah, opportunity want to change the tax, change to the tax system.
They do want a big changes in tax system. Closer to the election, all the parties will round on them. Maybe not the Greens. But I would say the mainstream parties will go, ooh, these guys are threatening to change the status quo. And I personally think if we keep going on the same economic system, we're going to end up with a few hundred families owning everything.
That's what they want.
Of course. And then there'll be the wannabes who think they're going to be rich, who will back them politically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there'll be this mass of people who are poor.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm.
Yeah.
I'll come down to my house and have a look.
I looked at the site and thought, ooh, someone's spent, that was impressive.
Some money's been put into it.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting, huh?
Yeah. But it comes back to what you talked about under the change to the electoral system or what the council were planning to do. There needs to be an overhaul around participation in voting, a huge overhaul.
Because
that's why it's been able to go from one cheek to the other cheek, basically, isn't it?
Yeah, because a block of people don't participate.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, we'll give you a turn, then we'll give you a turn, then give you a turn.
When you get your rate, I'm just thinking outside the square here, when you get your rates demand, have that linked into with the voting time.
You could do it.
Surely there's somehow we could do that. Because everyone looks at how much rates they've got to pay. And, okay, people who rent don't, but the landlord gives that excuse when they put the rent up. So, you know, there must be ways we can do it that people makes it a bit more to the front of what their daily lives.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
You can
maybe.
Try.
Yeah. Yeah. But think outside the squares. Try and think, okay, what are we doing here? You know, how do we get 75% of the population who are eligible to vote, you know, who don't vote, how do we get most of them to vote?
This number here.
Yeah.
440,000 remain unregistered ahead of the election deadline.
Oh, that's a general election, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's Māori.
That's Māori. That's just Māori on one. Yeah. Mm. What about European? What about New Zealanders? What about them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. It's a serious issue, our electoral system.
Yeah.
You're getting back to opportunity. Well, Hipkin's saying the door's open to them as far as they're concerned. Mm. He made it clear that parties Labour couldn't work with, and the rest was up to New Zealanders.
Yeah, which is a good answer. It's a fair answer, you know.
Yeah, he deflected questions about Te Pāti Māori and opportunity by saying he would detail which parties could and couldn't work with before the election.
What the poll was. A News Variant poll which I picked up on around the fall in support for the main parties.
Yeah,
I saw that too.
The Taxpayers Union had the Courier poll said that Labour tumbled to 27.8.
Yeah,
Opportunity, this was on Thursday this week, and Opportunity had risen to 6.1.
Another
poll, they were up to 8%, which I think you mentioned.
Yeah.
Labour was back up on 30%.
Yeah, that's
so the polls fluctuating backwards and forwards.
Yeah, and it basically said, translated the seat on the new News Variant poll, Labour would have 38, National 36, the Greens would claim 15, ACT 11, Opportunity 9, and New Zealand First 10.
Mm.
Yeah. And the poll also assumes Te Pāti Māori would reclaim all six seats, but that could be debatable.
Yeah, because Labour might take those.
Quite possible. I could see them taking. That's what the one.
Well, we don't know how Māori will think, but they could go. Now there's too much shenanigans going on.
It's a shame because something's kind of shot themselves in the foot.
Well, it doesn't help. People look like.
It seems to be a lot of bickering personalities.
Well, and it's like the National Party coup attempt. You know, it unsettles people. People like solidarity. You know. And
especially when you get close and close to
the election. Yeah.
You want to be sure these guys are stable.
And even the people prefer Prime Minister stuff.
Yeah.
Luxon's only 17.
Yeah. And I say, he's not. Even Nats that I know, they go a lot. And you're right, Mick, what you said is absolutely right. Doesn't matter. They'll still vote Nat. They're not going to change because they don't like the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
But they're still having this dream about John Key.
Yeah. And you can go back to the article I said about the opinions of certain MPs in that article. And you think, well, who else supported Pink?
I wouldn't have just done it on his own.
No, not a lone wolf. No, I wouldn't see him do that. No.
So.
I think those are the names that's quietly hung him out to dry. It's probably a good analogy of it.
But that's humanity. You go along with the flow, and then suddenly you think, oh, finally you jump over the other side of it. It looks like that's where the drift's going, you know. It can happen, you know.
Yeah. What else, Mick?
This one's asset privatisation. This won't be any surprise to you guys. Asset privatisation has made life more expensive.
Oh, has it?
This is a public assets article written by Dieter De Bonny, who I've never heard of. A coalition of unions, community groups and researchers are blasting out of the blocks on a mission to push back on what is seen as the creeping and accelerating privatisation of public assets. The group called Public Futures Aotearoa supports keeping assets and services under public ownership and control, and says it works as critical as ever in the lead up to the election, when assets have been sold and many more are on the chopping block. And Public Futures Aotearoa contends that public ownership of assets saves money, protects workers, and delivers better services. Moreover, it says privatisation often hasn't worked. Privatisation advocates promise efficiency, innovation, and competition, all while reducing government debt, which we know is a load of hog's wash. But the historical record tells a different story, that privatisation makes life more expensive, erodes workers' rights, and reduces service quality. Yes, I agree with that. They give the example of Kiwi Bank. The report points out the big four Australian-owned New Zealand banks built their dominance by acquiring public and community-owned institutions during the 1980s and 90s, and together now generate $10 billion a year in profits, with some of the highest profit margins in the OECD. Kiwi Bank was created to challenge this, but a commercial mandate and constrained access to capital has undermined its effectiveness. The current proposal to partially privatise Kiwi Bank would entrench this problem, and it goes on and on and on.
It's an interesting...
Yeah, very good article.
Good you raise that, because a couple of work colleagues had received their water rates bill.
Oh, my landlady too.
Yeah, did you? And they both live in Hamilton East.
Okay. They've had water rates bill.
Hers yesterday.
Yeah, they received
it.
Yeah,
gone up and $10 a week. Because I thought they were introducing water meters, but this is something to do
with water meters. Yeah, water rates. Yeah,
it's going to be a separate. Rates. It's going to be a separate entity.
Water rates. Yeah.
Yeah, and so they haven't got the meters yet.
No, but it's going to cost them. Fortune.
Whether the entity's already up and running.
Yeah, so
sounds like it.
Because I thought there was supposed to be a sort of like a trial run of a certain area.
They've done Ham East.
Yeah, yeah. But then the two colleagues that I know, one's our finance person, and she sort of said it was kind of based on the capital value of your home, how much they charge per annum.
Right, yeah.
And basically they're both saying the same thing, but they were saying the same price per annum, $1,400 and something.
Mm.
Yeah. But I was thinking, well, given what you had said, Mick, about asset privatisation, I said the problem with this thing is if further debt, council needs to pay back debt.
Or change of ideology.
Ideology. Yeah. Your water meter thing, company, could be... potentially fricked off, like what's happened in England.
Or the airport,
probably got Thames Water in London.
Yeah.
So where the profits go to the shareholders and infrastructure is just ignored.
We haven't had any. I looked at our, I looked at Tenno and what it was proposing, but didn't tell anything, say anything about Hamilton West at all.
Okay, whether it's going to be rolled in or whatever, but the meters aren't in yet, apart from the test one. So whether or not they've said, and let's face it, on your general rate demand, it always goes, right, your rates are X, and it includes
services,
water.
And
gives you the percentages it goes towards. So whether or not they may sounds like they may be splitting that off already inside your general rate bill. But eventually, of course, it'll be a separate rate bill.
So this is a so-called
separate company.
Yeah.
So, Tenno said this on a couple of days ago. Rates and water invoices on their way. Hamiltonians have started receiving their new look rates and water invoice. Payments are due 3rd of September 2026.
Okay.
And it says read more about the combined invoice.
I did see the headline.
I didn't read it. It's the 1st of September.
Yeah, it could be too. Yeah. Around there.
Yeah, so we haven't received it. Yeah.
Okay.
Anything that smacks of privatisation.
Yeah, it would be a classic entity to be privatised.
So you can set it up so you can keep it in public, but then you can set it up so, we can just switch to private.
Yeah, and just hock it off.
And let's face it, there's always the court, we can't afford, so we have to sell our assets.
Cash cry.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. But isn't it, Mick and I were talking on the way here, Mick was talking about one of his clients was getting healthcare from I won't name the company, but whatever. So they were providing, so the state pays, so the client's getting care, which is great. That's not, that's done by a private operator who then contracts to the state.
Yep.
Or the hospital
who gets paid for
but
by
rather,
this.
But rather than the hospital have it in-house...
Care facility.
To go out in the community, they'll spend more on contracts. It's just bizarre.
And I know that's still the way it is, but it's like you're putting in the middle, it's like the profit for the water companies. You're putting a profit ideology in there. And the person who's made that company up, they're not working for $23.50 an hour.
No.
They don't want to do that at all. No, they're looking for profit.
Maybe a little times.
As much as they can possibly squeeze.
Yeah.
Times two or three.
But the healthcare actual at the front counter, they'll be getting paid very similar to, if not the same or worse, than if it was done by the state.
I said, when I was a community support worker, I was on a certain wage, but the agency was picking up twice that.
Oh, at least.
For my services, I was getting a half.
Yeah. They charge you out as a labour unit, and they charge you out.
They're making the money.
They line the pockets, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Beware privatisation.
Yeah, as you were saying, yeah. I found one article that was of deep interest to me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw it. Here it is. It's to do with Chris Bishop again.
Oh, him.
Obnoxious little man. But Chris Bishop blocks Gisborne Council's plan to tackle forestry slash and erosion. A decision by the minister responsible for RMA reform, Bishop, to refuse a plan to urgently tackle destructive land use practices in Gisborne has been labelled indefensible by a local environmental group.
He refused to.
Yeah. What was it? So he's refusing to go ahead with it.
To tackle what he calls the destructive practice of forestry slash.
So he's had a recommendation and
he's going against it.
No, and they said no, basically.
Which who's saying no? Chris?
Chris Bishop.
Yes, yeah. I mean, he's going against the recommendation.
Okay, the Gisborne District Council, which was behind the plan, was similarly unimpressed, saying the 7 months it's taken Bishop to make his decision was disappointing.
Yeah.
So what is...
you could read into the fact is he got interest in the forestry industry.
So has Mr Bishop come up with an alternative idea?
No, that didn't seem to be at all.
Or did he say why he'd refused it?
No, I don't think he gave a reason.
Just said no.
No, he just said... He just blocked it.
Okay. And what is there recommendations in there?
No, I only just took the first part of the article out.
Okay.
So nothing.
So in other words, it's not going anywhere. It's sort of log jammed, pardon the pun.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
It's quite good. Yeah. My way of thinking was, has he got shares or interest in the forestry industry?
Well, whether he has that or whether he has just people in the support base of the National Party. Lobby groups are very powerful.
Yeah, yeah. They're probably loaded with national-like type people. Yeah.
Can be, indeed.
So
it's disappointing because, I mean...
That is disappointing.
So the problem's not going to go away. In fact, it's probably going to get worse.
It's one of the worst things that they've ever done is to... these big land holdings that were big runs.
Planted up in trees.
Yeah, covered in trees. Yeah, it was worse than they ever did.
Was it the last year had a problem with floods and some of that slash got carried down
to the beach and all that?
Yeah, it was a couple of... Gabriel and
there's tons of it.
Yeah, about 3 years ago. And cyclones,
so
hail.
He's basically adopting, putting a head in the hole in the sand, just to let it go away.
Yeah, or I think there's probably more money in forestry.
It's just been smart. It goes back to what the Greens have been saying, and maybe the opportunity. I was saying, let's be clever about when our farming practices and
sustainable.
You know, okay, when we're growing, planting trees, have a margins of native forest on the edge that you leave alone, and that can stop some of the runoff and all that.
Seem to enter the equation at all. It just seems to be money.
No, some private forestry owners do that.
You're driving along in a car,
because I'm a bit of a greenie, I always look, and there's some great examples.
In terms of a nationwide policy, sadly wanting.
It just beggars belief, I'd say, in regard to that. We know it's been a major problem. It's sort of...
The can has been kicked down the road, so to say.
Yeah, the regulations wasn't the onus put back on private companies? They were supposed to...
That was sort of the idea.
Yeah.
It wasn't enforced.
Yeah.
The best solution would be to never have converted it into that into forestry in the first place.
Yeah.
But that's after the, you know...
And also it's hindsight because, of course, of course, a lot of the, you know, and whether that's going to change with the price of honey, but, of course, a lot of the more recent sheep farms that have gone out of sheep have gone into honey, Manuka.
Yeah, yeah.
And which is a native pioneer plant. But whether or not that'll create its own risk with fires, et cetera, because, you know, the honey producers don't really want a native forest. They want the manuka. Which is native trees.
But you're creating, then they
also run the risk of getting those viruses that hit hives and parasitic wasps.
But the whole East Cape has changed.
About money.
Changed its whole, and not just the East Cape, but New Zealand was a sheep farm.
Yeah, that was
quite... A slightly smelly dairy farm, but that's the reality of what's happened in the last 100 years. We've moved from sheep and cattle
So
two
sheep numbers are actually
down
over it.
Oh, way down.
Oh, yeah. And the price.
When I first came here, everyone was crying that it was a land of 70 million
sheep.
Oh, yeah.
And we were called sheep shaggers for a long time. Yeah, yeah. And I don't know how they saw that. Sorry.
I lived a sheltered life. I don't know what
you mean. Yeah, the Aussies. You still got Aussies, and you still, if you go into the rural areas, when I went over there, they were like, oh, how's the sheep? You know, it's not bad.
The numbers have dropped markedly.
Yeah, big time. And I, if you want, I'll
try
and dig out.
Have gone up.
Yeah, dairy cattle especially. The herd's gone up through the roof. And we have diversified and all that, but you need, like you both implying, you need regulation, you need a state. And it's not just about the steep sides for forestry, it's also about, you know, we've drained a lot of our swamps. Swamps are sieves. Swamps pick up flooding. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all this sort of floodplains are actually there for a purpose originally. You know, so
that's the trouble. The argument for regulation has kind of shot itself in the foot because it was over-regulated.
Yeah, over-regulated and not worried about because of population. Mm. You know, when you don't, it's like anything. There's only one in the house.
When you start trimming back on regulations, where do you draw the line?
Yeah, yeah.
And the regulations, some must be for health and safety, for environment. Mm-hmm.
It's the repercussions, the ripple effect, on lots of things we do, everything.
And
we
it'd be nice if our economy was a sustainable one.
Exactly.
Yeah. But
get away from this. Just make money.
Neoliberalism.
Make money.
Money. Yeah. Monoculture. Pine industry.
Yeah.
Even your suggestion of having just manuka out there or kanuka, it almost goes into that monoculture.
Yeah.
And the risk of a disease.
It causes environmental damage because the bacteria in the soil isn't as good as one that's diverse.
Yeah. Well, and okay, manuka is what you call the nursery for other stuff.
If it's
not coarse, it's manuka or a bit of both. But of course, and they say that they can make money out of it, which is in one way good because the land use better to have manuka on it than just bare grass that slips.
Yeah.
You know. But will they let it grow back into native forest eventually, or will there be fires or will
that's
it be cut?
That's the first thing I thought about. You know, living in a world where forest fires seem to be springing up all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Climate change. Look at the UK and Europe. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's still, half of England's still declared drought. All of Wales, drought.
Yeah, they had
all of it.
Yeah, fires in the Midlands, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah. They're getting fires, and which from an environmental point is.
Just adds.
You know, they are starting to get people a bit more aware of rewilding and all this, but of course you get fires come through it because it's long grass and human beings. They're not starting on their own, most of them. They're starting from human contact. But go back to about that in the UK and Europe, with this massive drought, and the same thing applies here, and I talked a bit about it last week, is that your troubles, you have a drought, the pollution, the concentrates are far higher per ratio of litre of water. So when you have a million litres of water and you have 100,000 litres of sewage, it's diluted 10 to 1 or whatever the figure is. But if you only got 400,000 litres of water and you've still had the same amount of pollutants, so your concentration ratio through the roof.
The proverbial hits the fan.
You imagine the smell and the pollution for the invertebrates and the fish life and nature, etc. Because there only is this much water going down, and most of as it shrinks the natural water, the volume of that river is more polluted. Got to be.
And that's the next thing we'll have confrontations about around the world is potable water.
It's happening already.
Already.
Yep. Look at
more so than oil.
Oh, absolutely.
Because water's life.
Speaking of things of a pollution nature, I've picked this one up.
Mm-hmm.
This was done in Bolivia.
Okay.
Scientific studies in Bolivia have confirmed the elevated mercury contamination in four indigenous communities residing in these basins, with hair analysis revealing levels above acceptable thresholds in 74 to 96% of residents.
So this is mercury from mining.
Yeah, it goes down here. La Paz State University had proposed at least three mercury-free extraction methods to mining cooperatives, which would allow for higher mineral recovery, according to the information provided. The mining cooperatives rejected the alternatives due to the upfront investment required.
Money talks.
And would those mining companies be owned generally by wealthy people from around the world?
Who don't
have the name of a corporation, who don't have drink that water?
Yes.
Yeah. Kind of reminds you of the story of the mercury contamination in Minamata in Japan years ago.
Late 60s.
And I always remember this picture from a school journal. It showed a mum with her adult child, and the adult child had brain damage.
Yeah.
It was a huge scandal.
It was
fishing grounds contaminated with mercury, wasn't it?
Mm. But there's lots of contaminant, lead, of course.
Yeah,
mercury.
And I think it was because it was a fishing village.
Mm.
That's the problem. So, and they're saying it also in here. A research physician explained that recent investigations into fish carried lower contamination levels herbivorous fish as opposed to carnivorous species.
Right.
So the mercury levels in them are elevated as opposed to those fish that eat just whatever.
They end up contaminating themselves because they're eating on the fish that's already contaminated.
So it just goes up and up and up.
It goes on and on.
Well, it's a bit like our microplastics, etc.
It's in the food chain.
There's a famous photograph of the fetus with plastic.
The fetus.
Inside
the fetus.
It's fetus. I've had a couple of others to do with Cuba, actually.
Okay. Oh, okay, yep.
Yeah. And one... And what does it say in here?
Americans still doing their best to try and punish them for the Bay of Pigs?
Yeah, USA blockade leaves 7,000 plus Cuba-bound containers stranded in Caribbean ports. And they're carrying such things as food, energy, hydraulic resources and medicines. And they just lock them. They can't move them.
Going out or going into Cuba?
Yeah, they're supposed to be going to Cuba, but they can't get them out.
They can't get them, yeah.
They've been blocked. Rubio's been telling the world that it's not them that's putting the sanctions, the Cuban government is putting the sanctions.
No, America and the West, we're vindictive.
According to the Cuban foreign deputy prime minister and foreign affairs minister, referred to the US economic blockade as an energy siege. And it's described the impact on the Cuban population as collective punishment.
It is collective punishment.
There's been experts all during the week talking about this, and there's obviously these people are driven by ideology, still banging on about the Cubans and
being communists.
And it's a failed state.
Yeah. That's, I wonder why it's failing.
It's failed because the sanctions we've put on it for 60-odd years.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. I'm disgusted with it. I just think...
And it's not just America, as you say, it's the West...
The West is bearing over to America. We've got relations with Cuba, etc. But we don't go up to the American ambassador. So this is not okay.
As I point out, it is collective punishment.
Yeah.
Yeah. It says in here also, and we go back to the water thing. Beyond food, the installed shipments include resources for the island's drinking water program, where more than 3 million Cubans wake up daily. Wake up daily difficulties accessing that resource.
Basics of life. Yeah.
Well, the other one was also to do with Cuba, but the title says Brazilian landless workers donate 7.6 tons of medicines to Cuba.
Right.
But then again, becomes the argument: how do they get them?
Get it through.
Yeah.
And they make it really difficult even for tourists. It's, you know, to get to Cuba, even from New Zealand, there's all sorts of difficulties to go and to be a tourist to go to Cuba, you know. It's not easy, you know.
Yeah, it's difficult.
Yeah.
If you go
people
there.
Are hungry.
Just on ideology, just yeah, on...
I had an interview with Lucia Newman. She's one of the Al Jazeera South American correspondents. She was in Cuba and she was talking to people in the street, and this guy, I think he's retired, lived on a pension, there wasn't enough to fit, and he was starving. No guarantee we get a meal a day.
No.
It's
disgusting, really.
It's quite as quoted here. The campaign to collect medicines and medical supplies is just one of the many actions that the Brazilian people and the landless workers movement have promoted in solidarity with the Cuban people, because their struggle is also our struggle. For us, Cuba represents hope, not only for our people, but also for those who are fighting against imperialism anywhere throughout the world.
But isn't it...
Yeah, carrying on that theme, though, like you talk about collective punishment and blockades of...
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who've been collecting money and food items and medicines to go to Gaza.
Yep.
And Israel controls it.
Mm. Yeah. Collective punishment.
But isn't it weird, is that, like, for Cuba and Gaza, well, could be the same, but if the Cuban government, government collapsed capitalism came back, and so the wealthy ex-Cubans got their land back, etc., in Cuba.
The poor wouldn't be any better off.
Well, they'd suddenly have this largesse, but in the end... Cuba would be doing fine now under a socialist government if there was an embargo.
Yes.
They'll use the argument, oh, look, it's collapsed and now everyone can access food, etc., under the capitalist system. But they have made it, they're making it almost impossible for the socialist government of Cuba to feed its people.
Yep.
Not because of socialism, but because America doesn't like socialism.
Is that a fair? They always beat the drum on about communists.
Population that freaks out when they hear the phrase universal healthcare.
Yeah,
they panic.
Communism. Yeah,
yeah.
And
Cuba has universal healthcare. Hello.
Yeah,
but that's what I find. The thing is that if they do succeed, and hope they don't. But if America managed to collapse the Cuban government and it does go back to an imperialistic capitalist system, sure, the Cubans might be doing may well get fed better, etc., under the capitalist system.
But for how long?
But only because there's no embargo on it. And to say they could.
And given the economic system we run at the moment, they won't be any better off. Well, they might be better off, but for how long?
Initially, while they're selling the news bites about we've collapsed.
We live in a country where people here are going hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah, in this country,
Well, food and
food insecurity, housing.
Yeah, housing and security.
All that stuff,
So I just think that's, America, I just think that's disgusting.
It's just some rich bastards who wants to get back their property back in Cuba.
From Florida.
Yeah,
from Mark Rubio, etc.
His crowd. Did you follow? There was an interesting part of the primaries this week.
Yeah, I followed them quite a lot, actually.
Yeah, the Wisconsin one.
Yeah,
the governorship.
Yep. Yeah. Francisco Hong.
Yeah, but the person who actually won the governorship primary, Crowley.
Yeah.
How he came back from almost dead.
Yeah. She made a she was very popular, and she was leading the sort of polls from 10 to up to say 20%. Right. She was all the way through. Quite her background was just a cook and but political and all that.
Mm.
Had said the right messaging, universal health care and all that. So she appealed to a lot of the general democratic base in Wisconsin. But she made a couple of errors. And it was probably her own goal, really. They asked her about Thanksgiving, and she wanted Thanksgiving to be cancelled. In fact,
it's really important in America.
Exactly.
More popular than Christmas.
Exactly. So that was a major error because, Thanksgiving was on the back of indigenous genocide.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But Americans... Hey, we can't convince them about the genocide in Palestine. We're starting to, but Americans certainly don't want to hear about the genocide they did to their own people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that just plummeted her support. And this guy Crowley, who is sort of, for Americans, he would be, he's a moderate Labour person, to put it into New Zealand standards.
Yeah,
but
he's
not awful. How he stands on Israel, we'll find out, like a lot of them. But... he didn't make that gaffe where she made that gaffe, and I just thought it just, you could see people, the comments from what I call CNN and
so
all that.
So this is for nomination for Democrats? Or
for governor? The governor.
Governor of Wisconsin, yeah.
Because they sort of had a system, yeah. That's you can stand
one,
for...
That's one hell of a big gaffe.
It was a big gaffe. And she didn't explain herself very well.
You go to all that trouble to try and persuade people to your point of view, and then you alienate them in one sentence.
And she should have, hadn't said Canada. She should have just said, look, Thanksgiving, you've got to remember, I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving, whatever, time to have a day off for our families. But you've got to remember at the same time that Indigenous people see it slightly differently. Stop. End of story.
She blew it.
She blew it. And never recovered. And of course, he had lots of money thrown at him from
that helped as well.
Big business, which is a worry, you know. So
He had it was 0.1% ahead of her. Yeah, I think that's what
He won by under a percent. It just shows you how big a lead she blew.
Yeah, she was well ahead. She was well ahead in some of the what they call those things.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Also to be, it's interesting in America, the African and the African American cities tend to vote for African Americans. And she was Asian, ethnicity, and Crowley's an African American. So and those African American cities tend to support their own, you know, unless there's two, and then they'll have a competition with themselves. So, and that came out in the vote. Those African American parts of the cities there voted heavily for him. But it was very close race.
But they were able to share breakfast after the event. So that's,
and give her credit. She said he won, and she's not going to contest it. So even though it's so close, which she'd be legally entitled to.
I think she'd be a good sort of like
well, hopefully he does the right things. This person's capable.
Yeah, he's extremely capable. Yeah,
find a place in the machine.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. That they'll work together because I know they keep talking on about how the Republicans are collapsing like a
because it's like me going into Matamata and telling all the Matamata people, the white Matamata people, that they should be all kicked off their land because it was Maori land. It's a sort of a it wouldn't go down very well if I was trying to stand for council, you know,
pitch boxing stuff like that would be
I'm not so sure that Republicans the speculation is rife about what support is still out there for Trump. He's still got a heck of a lot of support.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, there's lots of corruption's going.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been guesses that, Republicans are in disarray and it's fallen apart, but I'm not so sure.
Well, I think...
Because when you get closer and closer to the, polling day...
And it's like we were talking about earlier, people vote for National Labour.
They always vote.
And they'll just stick with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, but those on the edges are probably not. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's the Democratic Party is their turn. Whether they're going to change anything. Once they're in, I doubt it. If they
not in a month of Sunday,
they'll just keep the same. All Israel's our friend.
Yeah, because those sort of people are still dominant.
So
we won't push for universal healthcare. We won't improve the state of infrastructure across the country.
But the progressives are definitely the Democrats are certainly gained some traction.
Well, they need to get a lot more.
Yeah, I think because Francisca Hong was she labelled a Democratic Socialist?
She's very left.
She'd be a progressive lot.
And Crowley is kind of
in that space here. Yeah. Al Sayed, of in that space. Okay, well, that's us. You can catch us on our podcast and on www.freefm.org.nz.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.